Okay, so get this. A rabbi, he refuses to lead services at this synagogue because they changed their seating arrangements.
Whoa.
And he wins in court. Crazy, right? That's what we're looking at today.
No.
It's a case from 1950, Fisher v. Congregation B'nai Yitzhak, where these like unwritten rules, they actually turned out to be legally binding. So you'll learn how something as simple as like, you know, a synagogue's seating chart could become this huge contract dispute.
Absolutely.
And why this matters, whether you're, you know, a lawyer or just someone who is interested in how like cultural and legal worlds collide.
It's a fascinating case, you know. What's really interesting about it is how even like these seemingly minor details, they can become these like major points of contention, especially when you're talking about deeply held beliefs.
Okay, so set the stage for us. What were the basics of this case?
All right, so back in 1950,
Okay.
we have Rabbi Fisher. He's an Orthodox rabbi, and he agrees to lead these high holiday services for Congregation B'nai Yitzhak for a fee of $1,100.
Okay. Sounds pretty straightforward so far.
You would think, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing, the contract, it didn't mention anything about seating arrangements.
So where's the conflict? I mean, do most synagogues just have, you know, standard seating?
Yeah, you'd think so, right?
Yeah.
But here's the twist. The congregation had always followed this Orthodox tradition of having separate seating for men and women.
Okay.
You know, it was like deeply ingrained in their practice,
Yeah.
but it was never part of the written contract.
Oh.
And then after the contract was signed, they decided to change it up and go with mixed seating.
Ah, I see where this is going. That must have been a huge problem for Rabbi Fisher.
Huge. Yeah, for Rabbi Fisher, this was so much bigger than just where people sat. His religious beliefs actually prevented him from leading services if there was mixed seating.
Wow.
It was a matter of principle for him, and in the end, he refused to lead the services.
Wow. So he took a stand for his beliefs, but what happened next? I mean, did he just walk away or did this actually go to court?
He ended up suing the congregation
Really?
because he believed they had an obligation to keep the separate seating, even though it wasn't in the contract.
Okay.
And to make things even more interesting, the judge who was originally assigned to the case, he died mid-trial.
What? That's crazy. So what happened then? Did they have to start the whole trial all over again?
Luckily, no. Another judge took over and had to just pick up where the first judge left off using only the trial notes.
Wow, that's talk about a challenge. Wow, so what was the like central legal question that the court had to, you know, grapple with?
They had to decide whether the congregation was legally obligated to keep the separate seating, even though it wasn't written down. It was about figuring out if this unwritten rule, so to speak, had any like legal weight.
It sounds like, you know, one of those he said, she said situations. You know, how on earth could the court possibly determine what was truly intended?
That's where things get really interesting, and that's where the concept of custom comes in.
Custom. You mean like a tradition or common practice?
Exactly. The court ended up ruling in favor of Rabbi Fisher.
Really?
And their decision hinged on this idea that when a custom within a community is long-standing and everyone recognizes
Right.
it can actually become legally binding, even if it's not on paper.
So, because separate seating was such a strong tradition in that particular Orthodox community, the court basically said it was implied, like part of the deal.
Precisely. The court recognized that sometimes what's not said can be just as important as what is said, you know, in a contract.
Yeah.
They basically said that changing to mixed seating, it was a breach of contract.
Wow. So this case wasn't just about, you know, a seating chart in a synagogue. It was about the law and religion and cultural expectations all clashing together.
Absolutely. And it's a reminder that we have to be careful about making assumptions, especially when it comes to legal agreements.
This is already making me rethink a lot of things about how we just take so much for granted in our own agreements. What other things did the court consider when they made their decision?
Well, Rabbi Fisher's religious beliefs played a big part.
Yeah.
The court didn't just brush it off as some personal preference.
Right.
They understood that for him, it was about his ability to do his job, to perform his religious duties according to his faith.
So they acknowledged that for someone in his position, sticking to religious doctrine was essential.
Exactly. And they also looked at the conversations that happened before the contract was signed.
Okay.
These discussions might not be legally binding in themselves,
Right.
but the court said they were still important because they showed what each party was thinking and what they understood.
So even like casual conversations, like before you sign a contract, can become important later on.
Absolutely. In this case, the congregation's own rabbi had actually assured Rabbi Fisher that they would keep the traditional seating.
Oh, what?
Even though it wasn't in writing, it helped to show what they had agreed on.
It's like a puzzle where you need all the pieces to see the whole picture, right? Yeah.
A perfect analogy. The pre-contract discussions, the established custom, Rabbi Fisher's religious beliefs, it all added up to his legal victory.
This case is full of twists and turns.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything else that kind of influenced the court's final decision?
Yes, actually. Yeah. To solidify their understanding, the court relied on expert testimony about Orthodox Judaism.
Oh, interesting.
Experts came in and testified that separate seating wasn't just a preference, it was a fundamental requirement in this branch of Judaism.
So they basically brought in specialists to explain the religious context.
Exactly. This was really important because it showed that the congregation's actions directly impacted Rabbi Fisher's ability to carry out his religious duties, you know, according to his faith.
So this whole case is basically like a lesson in the importance of clear communication, right? Like, even if you think things are understood, it's best to be totally explicit about it, especially when you have these cultural or religious practices in the mix.
I couldn't agree more. And what's even more interesting is that this idea of unwritten rules having legal weight, it's not limited to just religious contracts.
Really? That's fascinating. So are you saying that this case has implications for, like, all kinds of agreements, not just religious ones?
Exactly. And that's actually something we're going to explore further as we dig deeper into the legal arguments that shaped this landmark decision.
I'm hooked. This is already shaping up to be one of our most thought-provoking deep dives yet. So stay with us as we keep unpacking Fisher v. Congregation B'nai Yitzhak and what it means for anyone navigating the world of contracts and agreements.
So let's dig into the legal stuff that the court used to make its decision.
Yeah, I'm really interested in how they justified those unwritten rules being legally binding.
Okay, so one of the key things they used was the concept of implied terms.
Implied terms, you mean like things that aren't actually written down but are still part of the deal?
Exactly. Like sometimes what's not said is as crucial as what IS said.
Yeah.
In this case, because separate seating had been the congregation's practice for so long,
right,
it created this implied term in the contract even though no one wrote it down.
So it's like if you go to a restaurant, you don't sign a contract saying you'll pay, but everyone just knows that's how it works.
Perfect example. Legally, these things are called customs and usages.
Okay.
And the Fisher Court really leaned on this concept.
So basically, they said that separate seating was so ingrained in that Orthodox community that it became an unwritten rule, binding on both sides.
Precisely. There's even a legal rule saying that if a custom is established and known, it's part of the contract, even if it's not mentioned directly.
Wow, that's wild. So it's like common law for contracts.
You got it.
These norms just have weight, even if they're not part of a formal agreement.
And the court went even further, saying the switch to mixed seating was a breach of contract.
So by changing things up, the congregation actually violated this implied term, even though the contract didn't say anything about seating specifically.
Exactly. The court got that this wasn't some tiny detail.
Right.
For Rabbi Fisher, it was fundamental to him doing his job, his religious duties, you know, in line with his beliefs.
It's fascinating how they balanced all these things, the written contract, this custom, and then the rabbi's own principles.
Yeah, it shows you legal cases are hardly ever simple.
Speaking of complex, what if they'd argued that separate seating was just like Rabbi Fisher's preference, not a core religious thing?
Great question. The court addressed that by looking at the expert testimony about Orthodox Judaism.
Whoa, right.
Experts said it's not just a preference. Separate seating is a fundamental requirement in this branch of Judaism.
So they had people explain the religious side of it,
right,
to prove Rabbi Fisher wasn't just being difficult.
Exactly. The experts helped establish that this wasn't just custom. It was a core part of his faith.
I see.
So the court saw that the congregation's actions were directly stopping him from fulfilling his religious duties.
So expert testimony was super important here.
Absolutely crucial. Experts help courts understand complex issues.
Yeah.
Like in this case, they gave insight into Orthodox Judaism and how important separate seating is.
So it's not just lawyers arguing back and forth. You need outside knowledge, too.
You need it to make informed decisions.
This whole case makes you realize how much we assume in normal agreements.
Yeah.
We think things are understood, but it gets messy when someone challenges those assumptions.
Totally. That's why this case matters today.
Uh-huh.
It shows how important clear communication is, especially with culture and religion involved.
It's like a warning sign. Don't assume things will just work out how you expect. Make sure everyone understands what's agreed on.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Okay, so we've got implied terms, customs, expert testimony, anything else that the court looked at?
Yes, the appeals court and how they saw the evidence from the trial.
Wait, they appealed the ruling?
They did. They weren't happy with the first decision, so they took it to a higher court.
Interesting. So what happened at the appeals level?
They reviewed the case, focusing on what the original judge found from the notes and evidence.
So they weren't starting from zero.
No.
They built on what had already been decided.
Right, and here's the key. Appeals courts usually give a lot of weight to what a trial court finds, especially if there's evidence to support it.
Wait, what do you mean?
Like, they won't just dismiss the trial court's conclusions for no reason.
Right.
They figure the trial judge, who saw the witnesses and the evidence firsthand, understood the facts better.
So unless there's a huge mistake or the evidence is missing, they'll likely uphold the first decision.
That's the gist.
Okay.
And in the Fisher case, the appeals court upheld the trial court's decision, confirming that the congregation was obligated to keep the separate seating based on those implied terms.
Sounds like appealing wasn't going to get them very far.
Well, appeals courts are mostly focused on the legal stuff, not redoing the whole fact finding.
Right.
So unless the trial court messed up the law, they won't overturn it.
So they agreed that the first judge applied the law correctly about implied terms and customs. No reason to change the ruling for Rabbi Fisher.
You got it. They reinforced how important these unwritten understandings are, especially for religious practices.
This whole case is a roller coaster. Who knew seating could be so legally complex?
Right. It shows that law is about more than just words on paper.
Yeah.
It's about context, interpretation, understanding how people actually interact.
And realizing that sometimes the most important terms are the ones we don't even say out loud.
Exactly. It's reading between the lines, thinking about what's expected, and understanding how culture and religion shape what we're obligated to do.
That's given me so much to think about. What does all this mean for lawyers and anyone working with contracts?
That's a great question, and it's what we'll explore as we wrap up this fascinating legal case. Stay with us.
Okay, so we've gone deep into this case, the rabbi, the synagogue, the seating, and how it became this legal fight.
It really is remarkable how something that seems so simple, just chairs, leads to all these big legal ideas about implied terms and customs and how religious beliefs matter in contracts.
Yeah, it's like they say, the devil's in the details. But here, it was the law hiding in those details.
Exactly. So let's think about what this means practically. What can lawyers, or really anyone who works with contracts, learn from this Fisher case?
Right. It can't just be a cool story. There's got to be a takeaway for us.
Absolutely. Biggest thing, be clear in your contracts. Don't leave things to chance, especially when you've got cultural or religious stuff mixed in.
So like spell everything out, even if it seems super obvious.
Exactly. If something matters to you, make sure it's in the agreement. Don't rely on assumptions or just hoping everyone's on the same page.
It's like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Right. Better to be super clear up front than end up in court fighting over what you thought was understood.
Exactly. And for lawyers who are writing these contracts, especially in these kinds of situations, think about putting in a customary practices clause.
Hold on. Break that down for me. What's a customary practices clause?
Basically, it's a part of the contract that spells out any customs or practices that everyone expects to be followed, even if they're not listed out somewhere else in the contract.
So like in this case, they could have had a clause saying, hey, the congregation will follow the Orthodox tradition of separate seating during services, like just to be clear.
Exactly. Then there's no way to be confused or misunderstand.
It's like a safety net to stop these disputes before they even start.
You got it. Managing expectations, making sure everyone's on the same page from the get-go.
This whole thing's got me thinking differently about how I approach agreements.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna pay more attention to those unwritten rules and stuff we usually miss.
Good idea. It's a helpful habit. And don't forget, this case isn't just for religious contracts.
Right.
Implied terms, customs, that applies to all sorts of agreements.
So business deals, leases, even just stuff you agree on with friends. Got to think about those unspoken parts that might be affecting things.
Absolutely. Sometimes what we don't say is just as important as what's written down.
This has been eye-opening. Any final thoughts to wrap us up?
I think the Fisher case shows us that the law isn't always so black and white.
Yeah.
It's about looking at agreements in context, thinking about everything involved, and realizing that those unspoken terms can be the most important ones.
Well said. And for everyone listening, if you're ever unsure, just spell it out. Clarity is key in contracts and any agreement.
I agree. Better safe than sorry.
And that's a wrap on another deep dive. Hope you found this as interesting as we did.
And next time you're making an agreement, think about those unwritten rules. They might save you a legal headache later on.
Stay curious, stay informed, and we'll be back with more deep dives into the fascinating world of law and society.